Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Gittin Daf Nun Aleph. We are learning today Le'ilui Nishmas Herbert Bodek, Hillel Moshe Ben Yisrael David, and also Le'ilui Nishmas Isaac Ratz, Yitzhak Ben Moshe, and Pearl Shapiro. All the chants we learn for should have an aliyah from our learning. Now, in yesterday's share, we brought down a machlokes that Ula said in the name of Reish Lakish that the reason why certain types of costs cannot be taken from nechasim mishubadim, from lien property, is because lefishein ksum, because they're not written down. When a person buys a property, so he knows that there's a potential that if that person who he's buying it from, the one who's selling the property, has outstanding debts, so then they could be collected from nechasim mishubadim, from these properties that he's now going to be purchasing. So he does a title search and he makes sure that the person has enough other properties, or he's willing to take a chance and assume that he won't get collected from, but he'll make sure to protect himself. But if something is not written down, so then there's no way a title search will show it up. There's no way he'll be able to protect himself. So that's the reason why Ula said in the name of Reish Lakish that properties that weren't written down, you're not allowed to go collect from Nechasim Shubadim. You can only collect from Nechasim B'nei Chorin. That's Ula Amar Reish Lakish. On the other hand, Rabbi Chanina had said that it's because they're not ketsuvim, they're not a set amount. So if they're a set amount, so then a person can know to protect himself. Yes, I'm willing to take a risk, I'm not willing to take a risk, there's enough properties to protect me, and therefore, if it's a set amount, we can collect from Nechasim Mishubadim. But if it's not a set amount, so then you can only collect from Nechasim B'nei Chorin, you can't collect from Nechasim Mishubadim. So, based upon that machlokas, we're now going to start today's shir. 10 lines from the top are Nun Aleph Omid Aleph, with the following question. Rashi understands the question as to only being on the sheet of Ula Amar Reish Lakish, which is because it wasn't written down. Others understand that it's also a question on Rabbi Chanina, who says that it wasn't Kitzuvim, that it wasn't a set amount. In any event, Motziv Rav Huna Bar Manoach, Rav Huna Bar Manoach asks the following Shaila. He says, we have the following case that's from a Mishnah in Ksubos. The Mishnah in Ksubos tells us that, let's say a person marries a woman, and the woman had previously a husband, and she had a child, a daughter, from that previous husband. So he agreed to go and support this stepdaughter. He agreed to support his new wife's daughter. And then Nebuch, he passed away. And she gets married to somebody else. And she makes a similar deal with this new husband, this second new husband, right? Her first husband had given her a daughter. Then he died or divorced her. And now the second husband had agreed to support this stepdaughter, but then he dies. She marries a second time. So she now has a third husband. And he too agreed to go and support her stepdaughter. And then he dies. So that's the scenario here. Mesu, if both her first new husband and her second new husband, after the husband that had given her the daughter. So her second and third husband all together. A little bit complicated. I hope I'm not making it too complicated. So both of these husbands died, and she actually had daughters from each of them. So in addition to the stepdaughter, she had a daughter from husband number two, and she had a daughter from husband number three. So when both of these two husbands die, so then, Mesu binoseyem nizonos minuchasim b'nei chorin, the real biological daughters of husband number two and husband number three are only allowed to be supported, to be given mizonos, from properties that are extant in the estate. But the stepdaughter, mizonos minuchas b'shubadim, she's even able to be supported from properties that had been sold subsequent to the arrangement that they would support her, and therefore she's able to be actually supported better than the actual biological daughters. So she's nozenes minichos mishubadim because mipnei she kebalas chov, because she's written into the contract, so to say, like a balas chov, and a balas chov can go collect from nichos mishubadim, as opposed to the actual biological daughters, they're only able to be collecting from the estate if it's minichosim that are b'nei chorin. Now, this is clearly a kasha on Ula Amar Reish Lakish, because Ula Amar Reish Lakish said they have to be ksuvim, and these were not written down. And Ula Amar Reish Lakish had said that only things that are written down are allowed to be collected from Nechasim Mishubadim. So is this a kasha on Ula? Some suggest it's also a kasha on Rabbi Chanina, because this wasn't for a set amount of dollars. However, others argue and say, no, since this was a specific obligation, in this case, in the Mishnah that we just brought down from Ksubos, it was talking about a five-year obligation, so some suggest that it is a kotzuv of a set amount of time, and therefore it's not a kasha rechanina. And that's where Rashi seems to understand this, because it's bita for chomei shanim, in that situation, and that's a set amount. Others disagree and say, well, it's for 5 years, but it's not a set amount as to how much he's going to eat during those 5 years. In any event, it's certainly a kasha nula, might be a kasha Rav Chanina as well. So the Gemara answers that it's not a kasha on either of them, because hacha, in this Mishnah that we just brought down from Ksubos, so the din is, b'mayaskinam b'shikano miyado, they made a Kenyan. So when the witnesses saw this agreement that the new husbands, husband number two and husband number three, would accept the responsibility to be giving support to this stepdaughter for 5 years. Each of them said they would do it for 5 years. So then there was a kinyan, so to say, kishikonu biyado. So therefore they made a kinyan, and therefore something that is a kinyan is like it's written down. And as a result, it's not a kashanul, because he agrees that if it's written down, so then the obligation can be collected even from the chosim mishubadim. More questions. This is, wait a second, if that's so then the banos nami, why are the daughters also not going to be able to collect from the chosim mishubadim? The biological daughters, because they can only collect from the chosim b'necharin. Why is that? If there was a kinyan made, so then the kinyan should work for both, the stepdaughter as well as the regular daughters. So Gemara answers a strange answer, and it says, b'shekonu luzu, v'lo konu luzu, because only the stepdaughter had a kinyan made, and the two daughters, the biological daughters from the second husband and the third husband, so no kinyan was actually made for them with the eidim. Where it says, my pasuk, where'd you get this from? Why are you saying that the stepdaughter, a kinyan was made, but the biological daughters, no kinyan was made? Where'd you see that? My pasuk, why do you separate this out in such a specific way? So where it says, because, bas ishto dahavoi bishas kinyan, mahani lo kinyan, because the stepdaughter was alive at the time of the marriage to husband number two and husband number three. Whereas Bito, the biological daughters, the lo habi b'shas kinyan, lo mahani lo kinyan, they weren't alive at that time, and therefore you couldn't make a kinyan for the future. So therefore, only the stepdaughter was alive, and that's why my pasuk, that's why we specify over here that only the stepdaughter, b'shekano miyado, whereas the biological children, which were not born at this time, at the beginning of the marriage to the second husband, at the beginning of the marriage to the third husband, so they weren't born, and therefore the kinyan wouldn't work for them. Lo mahani lo kinyan. Where it says, wait a second, who says that you couldn't have had the biological daughters born before the marriage? Now, we're not talking here about having a child out of wedlock. Milo askinan, why couldn't we be talking about that, in fact, the woman with the daughter from the previous husband, when she married the second husband, so she got married to him, had a child, a biological child, but then they got divorced. And then he took her back. So why aren't we talking about Milo askinan, b'ha'u tarvayu b'shas kinyan? In fact, how could that be? V'hechi dami, that both of the biological daughters were actually alive at the time of the kinyan, because in each situation, the second husband had married the woman with the original daughter. They had a daughter from the second husband. He divorced her, but then he was ma'asik rusha. So before she got married to anybody else, he said, I made a mistake, and he remarried her. And now, at the time of the remarriage, there was the biological daughter extant. She was around. She was alive at that time. So therefore, b'shekano miyado, when we said that the kinyan was made to support the stepdaughter, so the same kinyan should have been made to support the biological daughter. And the same thing happened with the third husband. He married her, and then they had a child, he then divorced her, but then he remarried her. So why don't we say, certainly a little bit unlikely, but it's certainly possible, Milo Askinan, David Tavai Bishaskinan, that both of the biological daughters, the husband who married her, the second husband, and the husband who married her, the third husband, they each had a daughter before they then divorced her and then remarried her. So all of the children are alive. The Gerisha, the Hadra. So therefore, why do you separate my Pascha that you're saying, the Shekonu Miyado, at the time that the kinyan was made, it was only for the stepdaughter, it wasn't for the biological daughters. No, they all were around, and therefore, why would you suggest that the kinyan was made for one and not the other? So Gemara says, no, still, Ella, Bito, his daughters, the biological daughters, the Bitnai Basin Kochla, they are supported because Basin said it's not right that the father's estate shouldn't go support his daughters, his biological daughters. So therefore, since the rabbis set up that they support, lo mahani lo kinyan, a kinyan isn't going to help. As opposed to the stepdaughter, Bas Ishto, the La Bitnai Basin Kochla, since she doesn't have the rights to eat based upon Basin's psak, because she's not a biological daughter, she's a stepdaughter, and there's no financial connection officially, so therefore, Mahani lo kinyan, therefore the kinyan will work. But this is very strange, Gemara says, V'chi migra gora, because Basin said that, yes, the biological daughters are required to be fed, midrabanan, that we we take the support from the estate, that's a din of the Beis Din, that's the din of the Chachamim. So somehow that should make it worse, that the Kinyan shouldn't take effect for them, because Beis Din said that they'll go and be financially supported. So somehow that should prevent the Kinyan from taking effect. And in the case of the stepdaughter, where there is no Beis Din's gezeira that the stepdaughter has to be fed, so there the Kinyan does take effect. Doesn't make any sense. Why should the fact that Beis Din instituted that they have to be supported make their situation worse? So it says, no, very logical. Ella, Bito, the actual biological daughters, Kivan Dibtinai Beis Din Kochlo, since Beis Din established, meaning the Rabbanan, that the estate of the father and the father himself, if he's alive, has to go and support his daughters. So therefore, one might have assumed that Amar Tsurare Atposo, you know what? The father actually gave them some money. And therefore, he said, listen, I'm on my deathbed here. I know you're going to have a hard time. Here's money. Go and put this money away, and you'll be able to support yourself, and you don't have to worry about it in case my estate doesn't have any properties that are extant, and you have B'nai Chorin properties. Don't worry, since you can't collect from the Nechasim Mishubadim, so go and use this money. So he actually gave them Tsari. Tsari literally means a bundle. So he gave them a bundle of money that's tied together. He gave them a bundle of money, and therefore the concern is over here with the biological daughters that since Beis Din made a tenai that they have to be supported, that maybe the father supported them. He gave them money on the side. Whereas the stepdaughter, there's no concern that he gave her money on the side. That's the kinyan that was made, that they would be able to go and collect from his estate, and therefore they can even collect from Nechasim Mishubadim. And therefore there is no kasha, ultimately, on Ula, Amar Reish Lakish, and as well on Rabbi Chanina. Okay, a little bit complicated scenario, let's go weiter. Now, the Gemara tells us, Toshma, we learn in the following braisa, Amar Rabbi Nosson. Rabbi Nosson tells us, a Masai, under what circumstances, we had said in the Mishnah, let's go back and again, a little bit of a complicated case in the Mishnah, Shimon had stolen a property from Reuven. Okay, Shimon then sold that property to Levi. Levi improved the property. Levi put in an irrigation system. Levi did all sorts of improvements to the property, and then the crop started to grow. And then Reuven finally is able to go and prove that Shimon stole the property, and he has the right to take back the property from Levi, because Levi really doesn't own it. He bought it from a ganav, Shimon, and therefore he doesn't own it, and Reuven takes it back. No. Levi then goes to Shimon and says, hey, I paid you for all the property, plus I put in all these improvements. You owe me. So all Levi can do to collect from Shimon, if he doesn't have any property, is to go collect it from properties that Shimon had sold, properties that Shimon really owed, that he had sold after the sale to Levi. So let's say Shimon had some properties that he had sold to Yehuda after he had sold the stolen property to Levi. Hope everybody got the case. A little bit complicated. We had this yesterday, though. So, in this situation, Levi is only allowed to go to the Nechasim Mishubadim of Shimon that are now in the hands of Yehuda for set amounts that were Ksuvim and Ketsuvim, like we said, like Ula and Rabbi Chanina had stated. So, they have to have been set amounts. Now, the improvements that he made, that's not a set amount, and that's not written down. So, Bain Ula, Bain Rabbi Chanina, you shouldn't be able to go and collect from those properties. And that's what Rabbi Nosson is telling us now. Amar Rabbi Nosson, a Masai, when is this true, that Levi cannot go and collect from Nechasim Mishubadim for improvements that he made in the field? He can only collect for the actual value of the field, but not for the improvements that he made in the field from these Nechasim Mishubadim. Bizman Shekodam Mikro Shel Sheni Lishvacho Sharishon. That's when, after Shimon sold the field to Levi, before Levi had a chance to make any improvements, Shimon then sold his other property that legitimately was his to Yehuda. So Yehuda bought the property before any improvements were done on the field that Shimon had sold to Levi, the stolen field that Shimon had sold to Levi. So Shekodam Mikro Shosheni, the sale of Shimon to Yehuda, took place before the Shevach that Levi put into the field, the stolen field that he had purchased from Shimon. In that situation, obviously, there's no way that Yehuda could have protected himself, because he said, listen, I saw you sold that property to Levi. I know what that property is worth. Okay, I'm willing to take the risk for that. And therefore, I'm buying this property for you. Understand that I might be at risk for that. But when he put in the irrigation system, when he put in all sorts of other things, I didn't know he was going to do all of that. And therefore, I can't be on the hook for all of that. And therefore, Avol Kodem Shvachu Sharishol Mechol Shosheni. But therefore, if when Shimon stole the property to Levi, Levi had put in the irrigation field, and only a year later does Shimon sell his other property to Yehuda, so now Yehuda should have done the title search and said, okay, the property that Shimon sold to Levi worth $1,000, but then he put in another $1,000 worth of improvements, so that's really a $2,000 outstanding obligation that I might be on the hook for, and therefore I'm willing to, I'm not willing to. No, when he bought it, he's saying I'm willing to do so. So therefore, Avol Kodem Shvachu Sharishol Mechol Shosheni. So then, Shimon, in this situation, had sold the property to Levi, who fixed it up prior to Shimon selling his other property, which he legitimately owned, to Yehuda. So then, in this situation, Levi is allowed to go to Yehuda and go to Minchas Mishubadim. Now, why is this the kasha? So the kasha is, Alma, you see from here, Mishum Delo Kodimhu. The only reason why Levi wasn't allowed to collect from Yehuda in the first part of this brisa was because shekodam mikro shoshen lishvach shurishon. In this situation, the improvements were only done after Yehuda brought the property. Levi had made the improvements only after Yehuda brought the property, so Yehuda can say, in that situation, I didn't know anything about it. However, if Levi had made the improvements already, even though they weren't written down, nevertheless, Levi is able to go to Yehuda and go and claim them. So therefore, this is a kasha on Ula again as well, because it certainly wasn't written down. Levi didn't write down how much improvements he put in. He didn't think he would need to. So therefore, why would he write it down? So therefore, he just did the improvements, whatever he wanted to. Now, the machlokes is this also kasha on Rabbi Chanina, who says that it's not kotsuv, it's not set in stone. If something is not set in stone, if it's not kotsuv, so then the lien properties can't be collected from. So this is a machlokes between Rashi and others, and some suggest that it is a considered like a set amount, and therefore Rabbi Nosson's statement actually is in accord with Rabbi Chanina. Others suggest, no, that this isn't considered a set amount. That seems to be Rashi's opinion, and therefore it would even be a kasha on Rabbi Chanina. So the bottom line is, it's certainly a kasha over here from this brisa on the opinion of Ula. So the Gemara answers, this is in fact a tanoihi. This is a machlokis tanoihim, the tanu, because we're in the following brisa. A motziim liachilas peros ulishvach karkos. You're not allowed to go and take from the nechos b'shubadim for the peros that were growing on this land and now they're taken away from him, or the shvach karkos, the improvements that he put in, the irrigation system that he put in. And likewise, you can't take lemozon ishovi abonos for the collection of the support for the wife and for the daughters that comes from the estate. You can't take any of these obligations minechos b'shubadim from lien properties, because Nishum Tikkun Olam, because nobody's going to want to go and buy anything if there's no way they'll know how much they're on the hook for, possibly. When you do a title search, and the title search come back with a question mark, say, we don't know, so therefore, nobody's going to want to do transactions, and therefore, in order to facilitate transactions from being done, we said that the only liabilities are those that are Kisuvim or Kitsuvim. So therefore, that would be the Tanakhama's opinion. Rabbi Yosef, says, no. He says, what type of a tikkun olam over here is there? There's no way you could collect from them, because they're not a set amount. Nobody would have had a havamin to go and collect. So what do we see? This brisa seems to suggest that Rav Yossi holds like Rabbi Chanina. If you don't have a set amount, ketsuvim, so then there's no possibility to go collect. And therefore, you don't need a tikkun olam over here, because you just can't collect. Whereas Ula seems to go like Rabbi Chanina. If it's not written down, so then it can't be collected. But if it is written down, so then it could be collected. So therefore, this brisa seems to be a machlokis tanoim that parallels the machlokis between Ula and Rabbi Chanina. Okay, now we go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, "Amotzi mitzia lo yishava." The Mishnah said that if a person finds a wallet and he goes and returns it, and he is giving back the wallet, and there's $100 in the wallet, and he says, "Here, here's the wallet, and here's $100. And the guy said, "Hey, there were $200 in the wallet." So he said, "Vamotzi mitzia lo yishava." We want to encourage people to go and bring wallets that they find back. And if they know that if they bring it back, the guy can say, "Hey, there was more money in there than what you found." So then they'd have to make it sure the guy's going to leave the wallet there. He says, "I don't want to deal with shrews. I don't want to worry about this. I don't want to take it out of my own pocket to pay for it." He says, "There's an extra $100 over there." So therefore, Hamotzi Mitzia Lo Yishav Mibnei Tikkun Olam. As we had said in the Mishnah, everything in the Mishnah was Mibnei Tikkun Olam. So it encouraged people to go and return something. They wouldn't have to make a shur of Modib and Mixas over here, because they'll say, "Here's your wallet back with $100. And the guy says, "There were $200 in my wallet." That should be a moda b'miktsas ataina. And therefore, a moda b'miktsas normally has to make a shua. So the rabbi said, "B'nei tikkun olam, you don't make the shua over here." Okay. Morris starts off and tells us, "Amar Yitzchak." Yitzchak says, "Shnei kisin kishurin matzasi li." If the person says, Reuven says to Shimon, "Listen, I really found one wallet." But Shimon says, "No, shnei kisin kishurin matzasi li. Shimon says, hey, there were two wallets tied together over here. No, and Reuven says, I only found one wallet. In this situation, Nishba, he does, Rabbi Yitzchak says, have to make a moda b'miksa shvua. As opposed to, if, in fact, two oxen were lost that were tied together, and Shimon says, Shnei shvarim kishurin matzasi li, that there were two oxen that were tied together, and you must have found both of my oxen. If you found one of them, Balomer, no, lo hayo el echad, I only found one ox. So in this situation, Eino Nishba, he doesn't have to make a moda b'miksas hataina. Why? What's the difference between the two cases? Between the cases of the wallets, where Shimon says there were two tied together, and Reuven said they only found one, and the case of two oxen tied together, and Reuven says they only found one, why in the case of the wallets does he have to make a moda b'miksas shvua? But in the case of the shvarim, he doesn't have to make a moda b'miksas shvua. My time, what's the rationale behind that? So, shvarim, the oxen, menaschei me'adadi, they are living animals, and they could break the tie between them, and therefore, you're right, they were tied together originally, but they broke the tie, and one ran away, and now Reuven only found one, and that makes sense, and therefore, that's why the Mishnah said, Amotzi Mitzia lo yishava, because of Tikkun Olam. So here, it's possible that the animals untied themselves, and therefore, why don't we want to encourage Reuven to return the one ox that he found? If he knows that there's a chance that Shimon's going to say, hey, there were two oxen there, he's not going to return it. So therefore, in this situation, where it's plausible how the oxen got separated, so we say, you don't have to make a moda mitzik shua. However, the kisim, the purses, so lo menaschei me'adadi, they didn't untie themselves. So therefore, if Shimon says they were two tied together, and Reuven says they only found one, so in that situation, we make a shua of moda mitzik, because it's a little bit unlikely. Of course, it's possible, it's a little bit unlikely that they got separated. Maybe somebody stole one and didn't steal the other, and that's how, or somehow an animal came along and ate one, or something like that. So it's possible, of course, that there really only was one there. We're not calling Reuven a liar, but in this situation, he has to make a shua of modem mixas. That's the first thing that Rietza said. He then continues and he says, if you have shnei shvarim kishurim matzasa, if Shimon says that, in fact, there were two oxen over here that you found, the halo omer matzasi ve'gzardi l'cho echmein. Yes, there were two. One I gave you back, and the other one I still have. And here, I'm returning you out the other ox. In this situation, hareza nishba. This is a classic case of Yitzchak says, of mod mitzvahs, even by the oxen, because they were tied together. And yes, Reuven says, I did find them both tied together. One I gave you back, one I still have. So in that situation, where Shimon says, you didn't give me back either one. So you're claiming that you gave me back one. And admitting that you didn't give me back one, I say you didn't give me back either of them. So therefore, this is a classic case of Modu Mitzas. I raise that Nishba. Reuven says that you have to swear in this situation. That's the two statements that Reuven made. Now, the Rav Yitzchak, Les Lei Hamotzi Mitzia Lo Yishava. But wait a second. Why did Reuven say in any of the cases that the person who's returning the kiss in the first case or in the second case with the two oxen, why don't we say, like our Mishnah, Hamotzi Mitzia, Lo Yishava, Minei Tikkun Olam. And we turn to Nun Aleph on Mebeis for the answer, because the Gemara says, Rabbi Yitzchak holds Hu D'Omar, not like our Mishnah, he holds like Kirabi Eliezer ben Yaakov, who argues with the Tana of our Mishnah. What is this machlokis? We see this in a Brisa, the Tanya. Here we have the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Omer, Pa'amim Shadab Nishbal, Taino Tanis Atzmo, and sometimes he doesn't have to. So when does a person have to make a Shvua of Modem Mitzas on his own taina? Our Mishnah said seemingly never because of Tikkun Olam. So we never ever ask you to go make a shvua of Modem Mitzas when you were the one that admitted it. Whereas Rabbi Lesben Yaakov says, yes, sometimes we do. Pa'amim Sha'adam Nishba al Taina Sasmo. Ketzad, when does Rabbi Lesben Yaakov argue with a Tana of our Mishnah and say that you would have to make a Modem Mitzas shvua? If a person said to an orphan, Nebuch, the orphan lost their father, and let's say Shimon died and he left orphans, and Reuven says to the orphans, listen, your father, Shimon, was a very nice guy, and he lent me $100. So, mone liyavich biyadi, I have $100 from your father in my possession. However, ve'chaltiv pras, I had paid him back half of it. Ve'chaltiv means I ate it, so to say, I gave him back half of it. As Rashi says, ve'chzarti lo chetzio, I paid him back 50 of the 100. No, so I only owe you 50. So in this situation, Rabbi Lezim Yaakov says, even though he was the one that made the taina himself, the orphans knew nothing about this loan. So therefore, they knew nothing about the $100. They knew nothing about the returning of the 50 of the $100. So in this situation, nevertheless, Rabbi Lezim Yaakov says, Harei ze nishba. He has to make a shvua of modem mitzas. And this is an example of zehu shenishba al taina satzmo. This person, Reuven, had absolutely no obligation that was written down that he owed the money to Shimon. So he's being a nice guy, and he says, listen, I owe your father $100. I paid him back 50. I only owe him another 50. Here's the other 50. No, he has to make sure that he paid him back the other 50, because he's Nishba al Tainas Atzmo, according to Elazar ben Yaakov. Whereas the Chachamim, who are the authors of our Mishnah, the Chachamim know, Eino Elikimesh of Aveda, this situation, the orphans knew nothing about this $100 loan, and therefore it's as if it was an Aveda. And Upater, we say, whenever anybody returns an Aveda, so they're Upater for making a Shua. Even in this situation, where it was Tainas Atzmo, he wouldn't have to go make a Shua of Modiv Mitzvahs on the other $50. So, you see clearly that this Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim argue. So in our Mishnah, which is authored by the Chachamim, they say that you never have to go and make it Mnei Tikkun Olam. Whereas Reb Elazar Yaakov says, yes, sometimes, because it's a Tainas Atzmo that you have to go and make a Shua of Modiv Mitzvahs. Moshe says, but why does Rebbe Elazar hold that this is Kimeshav Aveda? Rebbe Elazar Yaakov, let's lay Meshav Aveda Potter. Why doesn't he agree with the Chachamim? After all, we want to encourage people, Mnei Tikkun Olam, that you should go and return items. So in this situation, if he's going to have to make a Shua, he might not even admit that he owes the other $50 to the orphans. So I'm a rab because betoano katan. Because here it's not that the orphans didn't know anything, but they're ketanim, and therefore since they're ketanim, they're not believed. But at least we believe them enough that we'll make this Reuven go and make a shua. Where it says if they're ketanim, we wouldn't make a shua based upon the words of ketanim. So katan mide mashasha ispe. Is the word of a katan enough to go and make somebody make a shua? But it's not. We learned in the Mishnah, Einish Bayim, Al Tainus Cheirish, Shote the Katan, that the Tainus of these people do not have standing in court that you can go make a person make a modiv mix a shua. So if a Cheirish, a Shote, or a Katan, a person who is halachically not considered mentally competent because either they're unable to speak or hear, the Cheirish, they're Shote, they're Nebuch, they're crazy, or did not yet reach the age of Bar Mitzvah, so then none of them have the ability to go make a person make a shua. So how can you tell us over here, Rav, that b'tor no katan, that won't work? Shmuel says, no, you misunderstand. When Rav said b'tor no katan, he didn't mean literally a person who's under the age of bar mitzvah. It meant somebody who's like a katan, but they're above the age of bar mitzvah. My katan, it means a gadol. It means the orphan. He's a 25-year-old orphan, but he doesn't know his father's business. So why did Rav call him a katan? That my korle katan, the legabi mili the aviv, katanu. Because in regards to his father's business, he's like a katan. He had nothing to do with his father's business. So therefore, this quote, Cotton, who is a 25-year-old guy, he's above the age of Bar Mitzvah, he said, hey, you owe my father money. And as a result, he's called a Cotton, but he's really a Gadol, and he can go and make a Shua, the Legabi Mila Dovid Cotton, he's considered a Cotton in this regard, but he's a Gadol, and therefore he can go make a Shua, and it doesn't go against this idea of Ein Nishba Maltan Eschei Shot of a Cotton. Where it says, if that's true, then it's Ihachi Tainus Atzmo, Tainus Achermu. Then we said that the Machlos between Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chum is because it was a Tainus Atzmo that he came along, Reuven came along and said, no, you don't know anything about this. I owed $100 to your father. I paid him back 50. I owe him another 50. So then that's not Tainus Atzmo. This is based upon the son, Shimon's son, saying, hey, you owe my father money. So it's not a Tainus Atzmo, it's a Tainus Achermu. So Gemara says, you're right. It's a Tainus Achermu. However, Vodos Atzmo, it is a Tainus based upon Shimon's son. However, it is Hodas Atzmo, it's Reuven who's saying, I did borrow $100 from him, but I paid him back 50. And therefore, that's why Elazar ben Yaakov says, in this situation, we make you make a Shuas Modiv Mitzvahs. Where it says, if that's true, Kulu Tanasa Nami, Tanasa Chayr, Vados Atzmo Ninu. So then, the simple way to understand this is, then why would the Chachamim say here that this is a Tanas Atzmo, and this is like a Motzi Aveda, and should be parted for making a Shua? Here too, they should agree with Reb Elazar ben Yaakov that this is Tainus Achayim. It's a valid Godol who's making this, and even though Ein Ishmael Tainus Chayim Shor to Katan, he's only a Katan in the regards that he normally doesn't know his father's business well, but here, he's a Godol. And therefore, why would the Chacham say that you wouldn't make a Shvuah of Modiv Mitzvahs in this situation? Shmuel says, Taka, we have to re-understand. This is the way Rashi understands this. So Rashi says, in fact, we go back to Rav, and it's not talking about a Gadol who's just considered a Katan in regards to his father's business. We're actually dealing over here with a real Katan. And the correct understanding when we said that Ein Nishbayim, that we don't make a Shvua, Altainis Chayr Shot V'Katan, is only when we're dealing with an actual case where the money was lent to the Chayr Shot V'Katan, and there they have no legal standing. But if the money was lent to a Gadol, and along comes the Chayr Shot V'Katan and says, hey, this happened, and therefore they're not the main participant in the litigation, but they're just bringing a claim, so then we do listen to the claim of a Chayr Shot V'Katan in that situation, and we do obligate a mitzvah of Modeh B'Mitzvahs. So the scenario that we had, the Machlos between Reuven and Yaakov and the Chachamim, was a case where Reuven stated he owed money to Shimon, and Shimon's son comes along on behalf of his dead father and says, hey, I may be a katan, but I say that Reuven, you owe him the money. And in that scenario, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, we make a shuas more than mitzvahs, and the Chum say, even over there, we do not make a shuas more than mitzvahs. Now, why? Why would there be a machlokas? So the Gemara says, Ela b'der Rabba kamifligi. They're arguing about a statement that Rabba made. What is that? The Omer Rabba. Mipnei ma omra Torah mo de mitzvahs atayna yeshava. Why did the Torah institute this? The rabbis explained, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up this concept of din shvuas d'oraisa by mode of mikzas? Why is that? Because there is a chazaka, there's a certain understanding that people would not be so chutzpahdik. Ain't other may is pana bifnei bal chovo. If in fact Reuven had borrowed money from Shimon, so then he has a certain level of hakaras hatov to Shimon. There is no way, the chazaka is, there's no way Reuven would absolutely outright deny that. And therefore, v'hai b'kulei boyle michbrilei. In fact, it's possible that he wanted to deny the entire claim, but he just didn't have the chutzpah to do so. V'hai de lo kafrei mishum de'ein ademei is ponem b'mei ba'al chovo. He didn't have the chutzpah to go and deny it totally. So what he does is he denies it partially. Now, Mor explains, if we have a concept that a person wouldn't be chutz enough to deny it in all, why would he deny it in part? So, ubekulei boyle do'lodilei. He, in fact, would not have the chutzpah to go and deny any of it. He really wants to go pay it back. However, why would he deny part of it? Because behind the low odile on the entire amount is because he says, I'm just going to push him off for now. I'll say I only owe him 50 instead of the 100, but I really plan on paying back the other 50 as well. I'm just pushing him off for now because I don't got the entire 100. I got the 50, so I say, here, I owe you 50. I paid you back the other 50. And then when I get the other 50, I'll pay you back that other 50 as well. And so for ad habulizuzi or purana lay, I will go and pay you back when I get the rest of the money. Therefore, the Amar Rachmana, that a person might do. So therefore, Rami Shua Ilade, Kihech Delodi Lebe Kule. So therefore, this Shua Smodu Mixas, Adin Daraisa, was instituted because a person would never be so chutzpahdik as to deny alone. Somebody was nice to you, how could you dare? The Chazaki is a person who wouldn't be so chutzpahdik to deny it. Then why would he deny part of it? Because he's really planning on paying back the full amount, but he just doesn't have enough money right now to pay back the full amount. So he says, I pay back half of it, and here, I'm paying you 50% now. And then, when he does get the other 50%, he'll say, here, by the way, I really do admit that I owed you the whole amount. Here it is. I'm paying it all back. So therefore, the person is basically a good person, and he just wouldn't have the chutzpah to go and deny the full loan, but to deny part of the loan because he intends to go pay it back, he might. And therefore, Reb Elazar ben Yaakov says, in this situation, we make the shuas modu mikzas here, whereas the Chum said we do not. And that's what the Gemara now explains. Reb Elazar ben Yaakov sabar lo shnor bo lo shnor bivno. Just like a person would be so chutzpahdik to go and deny the loan from Shimon the father, he wouldn't be so chutzpahdik as to deny the loan from the son. Eino meis in that situation from the son as well. And therefore, the hilkach lav meishav avidu. It's not a real meishav avidu. This is a classic case of modu b'mitzas. And we have to presume that he's just denying it because he doesn't have the money right now and he wants to pay it back. Therefore, we make him make a shvuah or admit it right now and only pay back half. And they say, I owe you the other half. Rabbanan Sari, no. Bo, who the eino meis? A person would not be so chutzpahdik as to deny the actual person that gave him the loan. However, al bivno meis to the son, who he didn't really have that relationship with. The son wasn't the one that gave him the property. And therefore, to the son, he would be meis 100%. So therefore, since he wasn't meis, umi delo meis, he didn't deny the claim. He said, I paid back 50%. I borrowed 100 from your father, and I paid back 50. I still owe 50. Now, he would have had zero problem in saying, I never borrowed any money from your father, because he would not have any chazaka that he wouldn't lie to the son, that he would be so brazen that to tell the son, nah, I never borrowed anything from your father. Because only to the father would he not have the chutzpah to say that, but to the son, the chacham hoved, he would have the chutzpah to say that. And therefore, for the fact that he wasn't meis the entire loan, he was only meis part of it, when with lo meis the entire loan, he said, part of it I owe, the other part I paid back already, so then this is considered, according to the chacham, as a meishav avedu. And therefore, in meishav avedu, b'nei tikkun olam, so therefore we don't require him to make the shuas mo debi mixas. That's the proper understanding of the machlokes between Elazar ben Yaakov and the chachamim based upon Rabba's principle, and therefore everything works out well. And with this, we conclude today's shiur.